everybody. Time for another Shop Talk Show, number 265. And it's just me, your fantastic host, Chris Coyer, and a guest who we'll introduce in a minute. This episode is going to be, I guess we'll call it on podcasting, kind of a look at ourselves now that we're hundreds of episodes into Shop Talk Show on what is it like to podcast? What's the equipment? What's the software? How does sponsorship work? Just like the whole thing. It's not exactly about front-end web design development or, you know, whatever it is that we talk about here on Shop Talk Show, but we've gotten a lot of questions about it, and it's about technology, so it's kind of related and stuff. So this should be a fun one. Our guest is Mr. Chris Enns, who is a podcaster himself and edits our podcast and talks and thinks a lot about podcasting, the perfect guest to do this kind of thing. So we'll talk to Chris in just a second. I should say that this episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by GatherContent.com, which is a really nice web app for organizing and producing content for web projects. So stay tuned and we'll tell you more about that. It's really cool software. So Dave isn't with us this week. He's traveling in some exotic state like California or something. But, you know, his finger is really long and he's able to still press the button on the theme song. Kick it off, Mr. Dave. Okay, thanks for playing the theme song, Dave. That was so nice of you. So we have Chris Enns here. What's up, Chris? How are you?
Hello, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Oh, just even hearing your voice, so good. It's so much better sounding than mine. Can tell that you're actually a professional at this stuff.
All in the gear, which we'll get to.
Yeah, let's get to it. But first, a little bit about yourself. Like, what is it that you do? And what, like, I tried to give you an intro, but you can do a better intro for yourself, I'm sure.
No, that's great. I listen to the show because half of my business is doing the typical stuff. That's why I submitted a question a few episodes back about something, and it's building websites for local businesses using WordPress, mucking around in that. And then the other half of my business is doing podcast editing, which kind of fell into my lap a little bit. I was doing a lot of podcasting just as a hobby, as many of us and probably those of you listening do, and just through a bunch of random circumstances connected with you and Dave to start editing the podcast for Shop Talk and then CodePen and then other shows as well that I help out with, and just kind of really enjoy doing it, and so have been sort of pushing into that more and slowly saying goodbye to a bit of WordPress work. So don't tell my clients that yet, but that's sort of sure. Where it's going. So yeah.
Yep. And there's kind of a network involved as well.
Yeah. And so one of the hobby parts of it is running goodstuff.fm, which is a podcast network started with some friends a few years ago. And so that's more of just like an excuse to test or practice, rehearse the muscles for podcasting, I guess, and a place to sort of dump any of those podcast ideas as all of us. If you're into podcasting, once you start one, you're kind of like, why don't I do another one and another one? And so that gives me a home to do that. And also with my partner, Kyle Roderick, there we gives you someone to sort of bounce ideas off of and make sure you know, you're kind of doing something that's worthwhile and things like that, and help your friends out who want to do a podcast and things like that and get them started in the idea. So rather than setting up a whole bunch of different websites, which again, that's another thing we can get into, but it was kind of just a convenient way, a fun way to sort of test the waters mm-hmm. with podcasting. So,
yeah. I mean, at its root, a podcast, it kind of needs a website, or I shouldn't even say kind of, it absolutely needs a website, because a podcast is an RSS feed that's in a very special format that has an audio file as part of the like XML data of that RSS feed, and feed readers, you know, they know what to do with that RSS feed. So that might be totally transparent to somebody. I'm sure there's lots of people that listen to podcasts who they just open up some podcast app on their phone and there's some featured podcasts and they click them and they subscribe and they just appear on their phone or whatever and they listen to them and just have no idea and don't care that that came from an RSS feed. Yeah. But indeed it did.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where, I mean, sort of spinning it in a bit of a more of a shop talk vein, I guess, the front end design anyways of a lot of podcast sites has kind of, I would say, suffered for a long time. And only in recent years has the design aspect of it sort of improved a lot, I guess, because it was so basic. You just had to have an RSS feed. And statistically, anyways, for us, with Good Stuff, people aren't actually even visiting the website that often relative to the numbers of downloads on an episode. And so it does kind of, you know, fall by the wayside. But I would encourage anybody out there, there's on sites like ThemeForest or whatever, as I sort of look around and help people build a website for podcasting, there's definitely a lack of themes and designs and things that are appropriate for podcasting. And so that could be a little niche that someone out there might dive a little deeper into and make a little bit of money, maybe.
It could be. And I think I would start with, you know, this is a total rabbit hole already, but yeah. What is it that people want to do on a podcast website? I've been compelled occasionally to go get links or something. I mean, like, wow, what was that thing that they were talking about? I mean, that's a reason to visit show notes. But although admittedly, 1 out of 100 maybe podcasts I listen to, I care to go visit the show notes. You know, I like, yeah. I question a little bit that, but they're good SEO and they're good. I think that's just a good practice to have pretty good show notes. It's probably, you know, extremely cool to have every single episode you do transcribed, although that can be occasionally cost prohibitive, but would be a good idea. I wish we did it. But so that kind of thing could be present on a show. And certainly if you're talking about anything that has a visual component, I mean, you know, it's basically radio here. You can't exactly show off like some beautiful architecture that you're talking about or something. So if there's some audio or I mean, you know, anything visual, video or photos or anything, those are a good place for the show notes, I suppose.
Yeah, it gives you a place, I guess, to sort of, you know, house that kind of stuff, show it can be people's first impressions of your podcast. And so
right.
It's good, but often, like, if you had told me, hey, Chris, you should go check out American, what's the NPR show? I can't think of it right now.
This American Life?
Yeah, This American Life. And I went there, I wouldn't really, if the website was terrible, but you had said the show is really good, I would still listen. You know, that's where it kind of, it breaks yeah. down a bit. But I know looking like you guys did, over at CodePen, CodePen Radio did a redesign of the podcast page a little while ago. And it kind of is like, it just helps reinforce the brand or whatever of your show. And it looks good and makes you feel good about listening to it, I guess.
Yeah. And you definitely want, I mean, I don't know that this will ever change. You want big old links that are like, we know you're not going to hang out here. Go subscribe in something where that yeah. show will just start appearing. Please.
Yeah, exactly.
On your thing, because that's what you want anyway. Although, I don't know, once in a while you hear from people who just only listen to the show on the web for yeah. whatever reason. And so yeah, exactly. That's the thing. So you got to have a website because you need that RSS feed, and you might as well make that website, you know, as valuable as it can be. And I just don't know. I don't have that nailed exactly, but I like that idea of first impression, you know, and so I think I'm thinking about that as we are redesigning Shop Talk Show. It's slow to go, but we have some, you know, we're working on it. And I think it should probably have like pictures of Dave and I, and it should, it should really feature the last few shows at least in prominent way and what it's about and make it really easy to get around and see what we're about. Because I like that idea. Maybe we'll make that the primary concern is first impression, you know?
Yeah. And it helps give a, I think, you know, any show that you listen to and you listen to, you know, radio in the car or whatever, you don't really have a connection with the person. You have a visual, you know, in your mind of what they might look like. But if you have an actual, like their actual picture to look like, and obviously with Twitter and stuff, people see your avatar. And I'm guessing most folks who listen to this know who Chris Coyer is and, you know, roughly what he looks like, but
who knows?
Yeah, exactly. They might not. And it just gives them a visual hook that is going to maybe want to bring them back. So.
Okay, so we can get to a little bit more of that website and the technology stuff in a minute, but I thought we'd start with equipment because a lot of people have questions about that. That is a guaranteed research scenario. It's not obvious, perhaps, to a lot of people what you buy to get started podcasting. And so I thought we'd maybe break it down into some categories like a level of equipment that is $0. Right. And I guess nothing costs $0 because you'll probably, you know, websites generally aren't free and computers themselves certainly aren't free. So, but let's assume that you can spin up a website fine and let's assume that you already have a computer. What's the $0?
Yeah, I think the first, before you spend any money at all with a podcast, I think the general idea I recommend to folks is just record yourself into whatever, whether you're a Mac or PC or your iPhone or Android, find an app and just try recording yourself and listening back to your voice. And just decide if you like that, first of all, because that honestly is, for me anyways, was a big thing to get over. I recorded, I don't know how many, 10, 15, whatever episodes of something, just, and could not stand the sound of my voice, because you're going to have to edit it, and then you're going to have to tell people about it, and they're going to listen to it, obviously, that's the idea. And so you want to be comfortable with your voice, and most people, I think, will get over that. They generally have a bit of a awkward fear of their own voice, or sounding dumb, or whatever, and you'll get over that, but just make sure that you do actually want to put your voice out into the world, I guess, before you start buying gear. And they maybe just another pre-equipment buying thing is just having a bit of an idea that of what you're wanting to do with the podcast. And probably you do already. That's why you're looking into this, and that's why you're listening to this episode.
Sure. It is worth considering, though. I can tell you, in the early days of Shop Talk Show, we had the feeling that there were enough interview shows. And so we specifically were like, let's not interview people. And we didn't do an amazing job of that, because occasionally we have guests that, you know, like I had you to tell your story and you know what you do and stuff, but we don't, it's not an hour of us asking questions about somebody's life or whatever, because honestly there, and this is still true, there's a lot of those, so we're like, yeah, let's do something else on purpose. So that was us pre-planning, like, what do we want to do with this show that's considered,
yeah,
not just, you know, well, yeah, I don't know, let's just talk to each other or whatever.
Yeah. So then in the $0 range, obviously, is just getting, I have a bit of a mantra, and I know I've shouted, or not shouted, politely asked with you guys at CodePen and others. So it's just always make sure everybody has headphones on, because in general, if you're having, I guess, a guest, or you're talking with a friend or whatever over Skype and things like that, and you don't want their audio to bleed back into your audio and get mixed up and you get echo and all that kind of stuff, that you might not be aware of that happening while you're actually recording the conversation. But then as soon as you go back to listen and edit, maybe then all of a sudden you've got this slightly delayed Chris Coyer on the call and you're like, how do I get rid of that?
And you kind of can't sometimes. Like, right. It might be a total scrap.
Yeah, exactly. There's tricks in a bit. You can sort of eliminate some of that, but it's definitely, you save yourself a ton of work just by popping some headphones in. So
headphones absolutely required.
Yeah,
I would say.
And even like we said, you know, your iPhone or whatever device you might have, pop those in. Doesn't have to be anything super fancy. If it is the big sort of, you know, studio professional looking kind of, they don't have to be expensive, but headphones that you pop over your ears and cover your ears, that's going to be better, because there will be less bleed of the audio out of the headphones back into your microphone. But yeah, and honestly, sometimes we can get into this a bit too, but sometimes buying a bit of the equipment, like a good pair of headphones, puts you in the mind of I'm a professional, even if it's kind of the faking it until you make it kind of idea. Like, you buy the equipment so you feel like you're a podcaster or an audio radio dude or dudette, and it just helps you sort of feel more professional, I guess, and gives you a bit more confidence, mm-hmm, if you're lacking there.
So if you have a podcast all by yourself, I mean, you need to record yourself. So there's all kinds of software for that. There's lots in the free, like I'm using free software right now. I'm using QuickTime Player that just comes installed on my Mac, and that's all I've ever used for this show. It's not, you know, that may change someday. I'm sure there's, you know, but it tends to work fine. And as long as you're, you know, following these rules, headphones, good microphone, whatever, you'll get a decent audio recording out of it. Not to say that I do everything perfectly, because I do have some questions for you to level up my game, because I'll tell you, it's time, I think. But anyway, I didn't pay nothing for QuickTime Player. I just, we popped it open. And the way we did it was, and have always done it on Shop Talk Show, is very rudimentary. You go 3, 2, 1, and everybody clicks the button at the same time, and we all get individual recordings of ourselves, you know, that start roughly at the same time. So that's about good. And if I was editing it myself, I guess maybe I don't know, like, you do it, and you're our podcast editor, and having those individual recordings is pretty key, isn't it?
Yeah, so if you're making the leap from doing a single show, which actually, again, going back to starting out, I would recommend, and you don't even have to release it to anybody, but just record 3 episodes of yourself trying to do a 15-minute podcast and just sort of practice that and see how that feels. But once you bring in a friend and you're using, you know, Skype, let's say, to call each other, then doing what you're doing on Shop Talk Show and CodePen and stuff is what they call a double ender, where you're each recording your own end of the audio. You're still hearing each other over Skype, obviously, but you record each end. So that way it's not getting the compressed version that Skype sort of sends over to one person. Because there are apps like Pamela for Windows. I don't know where that name came from, but Pamela for Windows is a free recording app to record a Skype call with a guest.
It's called Call Recorder on Mac.
Mac. Yeah.
And yeah, they have a FaceTime call recorder. That, and that gets everybody. And that's actually kind of good to have as a backup, but is for probably sure. Not so good for the final.
Yeah, and it's like I did a podcast I have that is dormant right now called Show Me Your Mic, that's all about podcasting. For the whole series of that show, even though I was interviewing other podcasters, I just used Skype call recorder or something like that at the time to record mine. And that's all. I just used the compressed version of their audio and, you know, just dealt with it. Because it does allow you to get be a bit more efficient, right? Because you don't have to wait for the guest to send you the audio back.
Yeah, you're not spending hours like lining up two audio clips next to each other to make
exactly.
sure that they're...
Yeah. Yeah. And so you don't have to spend a ton of money there either, because I think Skype call recorder is $30 or something like that. So, and Skype is free for now anyways. Thanks, Microsoft. And then, when you get into the bit of the editing, we'll have to loop back around to the equipment, but a bit of the editing side, if you were to do it yourself and wanted to stick on the free side, GarageBand on the Mac or iOS even, or Windows Voice Recorder, I think in Windows 10, we're both Mac nerds here. So I'm a little bit Windows deficient in my expertise, but, all of those are free and can definitely do everything you need to record a podcast and get it out into the world in an
empty. Yeah, your job will be stitching those pieces of audio together. And that's common. It might be your voice talking. It might be your guest's voice talking. You might have to record, a sponsorship spot separately and put that in. You might have an intro and outro that you're sticking on to things, that kind of thing. And that's what you're talking about, right? Those pieces of software have been stitched all those things together.
Yeah, exactly.
But we don't do that. We have you do it partially because time and partially because you're a professional at it and you'll probably do a better job than we would.
Which is a thing. I know we will get into some of the business and sponsorship and obviously there's time and a place for folks to outsource the editing and production of a podcast, because it does. I mean, it saves you and Dave time, obviously, that you would otherwise be doing. And maybe I don't know how much you would love that or not, but some folks might hate that part of podcasting. They just love the conversation, but editing is like, you know, pulling teeth or whatever for them. And so that's where outsourcing some of that kind of stuff can help sort of up your game of your podcasting. Even if the quality isn't necessarily better per se, it does help in terms of the energy you can put into marketing maybe, or your day job or whatever it happens to be in your particular situation. So,
mm-hmm. So you can get pretty far for free. You can get a website for very inexpensively. You have a laptop that probably has a microphone on it. That's not great, but it will record your voice for sure. And you at least have phone earbuds or something probably already. If not, some, you know, most people have kind of over the ear headphones somewhere. Pretty close to zero expenditure, you can get pretty far in podcasting land. But let's say you want to upload it a little bit, and I think a lot of people probably even start with a little bit of budget. You know, they're like, well, I expect that I'm going to have to buy some kind of microphone, but I'm new to this. So what's the sub-$100 kind of situation for?
Well, that's where, like, just keeping in mind too, whatever you buy here will help any sort of Skype, FaceTime, Google Hangouts you do with, you know, family, work,
even friends. If it's not podcasting,
right? And so you can consider it an investment in your future conversations, I guess, is a nice way of thinking about it. And so something like a USB headset from Logitech, they range from $30 to $70. I know, and I do a YouTube fan podcast, and one of the hosts there has just a headset on, and that's what he uses, and it works fine. It's pretty good. And
I'll tell you, we have guests on Chop Talk Show that I don't know. This is a whole thing. We should probably be, I don't know, how much do you want to ask of a guest?
Yeah.
You know, if you're, you know, Jesse Thorne or whatever, you should probably have guests that are Mark Hemman or whatever his name is. You know what I mean? Like, you have a podcast with serious value to it. You probably ask a lot of your guests, like, come to my studio, or if you're going to do this thing, don't call me from your limo as it drives under a bridge. You need to be somewhere where we're going to get a high quality audio recording, because this show has high quality standards. We're kind of not I don't know. I guess at that level on Chop Talk, you know, I don't want to place a burden on our guests. So we send them advice, and we even have a page of our website that explains kind of the basic expectations we have, but it doesn't say you need a condenser mic or whatever. It just doesn't ask that of them. And in fact, if they only have a laptop mic and some headphones, that's fine. Then we'll just do what we can in post and make sure that it sounds good. But the guests who go as far as just getting a USB headset definitely can tell the difference. Sounds much better.
Yeah. And some of the, like, we'll go through a bit of that checklist maybe, but just some of those basics of like making sure there isn't a washing machine running right beside the computer or whatever, those kinds of things and birds flying overhead. And that's what every podcast or audio editor anyways in general loves to hear is we'll just fix it in post. Cause then, you try to work the magic and there's only so much you can do, but like you said, it is what it is in terms of the audio, the conversation. I always say to anybody with podcasting is if it's a really good conversation, it won't matter that there's a rock, you know, falling down the hill in the background or whatever the sound is because the conversation or the story is so good. But if it's anything less than like someone telling their story of going to land on the moon or whatever, you do want audio to not distract, I guess, from that conversation.
Right. So that's I can really tell the difference. Just, and it's our fault because Dave and I travel around and have varied guests and stuff that are, you know, despite all the magic that you work, we have some variable quality to Chop Talk Show. And when I listen back to us, I'm always like, I really prefer the ones where we were clearly like at home and with good quality.
I always love getting the message from Dave. It's like, so our guest was describing some horrible scene of.
Yeah, I think they were at the zoo when they did this. Exactly. Yeah, it's pretty weird.
I'll just say the USB headset from Logitech, and then there's also another mic that people may not have heard of, and is an Audio-Technica ATR-2100 dynamic microphone that's about around $70 on Amazon in the States anyways, and works actually as a USB mic, so it works great if you have nothing else. You don't have a preamp, a mixer, or any of that kind of stuff. But it also has an XLR connection on it so that you can kind of grow with it if you want to buy more equipment down the road as your budget expands, your sponsors increase, all that kind of stuff.
So USB, obviously, we know what that is. And is XLR like the big circular?
Yeah, the sort of three-pronged plug that you'd see on, you know, everybody from, well, like U2 would use down to me in my little basement studio here.
So what does that mean? Like, do you just instantly lose quality if you plug it in with USB, but the same microphone has XLR, and if you plug it in that way, it'll just be way better?
Well, you can get, you can do things like having a preamp to sort of sweeten the sound a bit before it goes into the computer with XLR. It gives you just flexibility. You can actually, I mean, you could take that mic and use it in a live performance, let's say, if you needed to or whatever, for some reason. I like that mic as an option because if I ever have a guest in studio here, let's say, or if I want to, you know, a friend across town can just quickly borrow it and plug it into their computer. It gives you just some flexibility without having to worry about a whole bunch of equipment. And then also using the same mic for portability. So if you're, like in your case, let's say, it could be handy where you'd have it maybe at home with a mixer, but then you just unplug the mic, take the USB version of it, you know, on the road when you're
at some show. And it's $70. So
yeah. And so if it goes missing or you have to leave it with a guest or something like that, it's not the end of the world. So.
Okay. So upgrading beyond that, say you got more than $100, you know, which at the Shop Talk Show level, we should probably have invested slightly more than $100 at this point. But not, you know, not a studio, and maybe not thousands of dollars, say $250, you get a little bit more, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think, which is a really important point to make to folks, that you don't need, $800 of equipment to have a successful, whatever that means in your world, but like successful podcast, like Shop Talk Show, right? And you do have decent gear and you're not like just talking into tin cans, but it's not a requirement. That's not going to instantly give you success just because you have that equipment. There's all sorts of variables. But once you are ready to sort of move up, I know you've been using for as long as I've known anyways, the Rode Podcaster, right?
It's one of many I have, but it's my primary one. It's the one that I just like it. I feel like I sound okay on it, and I've yet to visit a URL that shows me a microphone that compels me more so far. And I have this as a question to you, and we'll get to it just right after this, I guess, is like, let's say it's time for me, Chris, what I want to invest, and I want to sound like you, or I want to sound like, you just turn to any radio dial and listen to anybody on the radio and they sound amazing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I don't sound that good. I mean, I like the sound of this microphone. Okay. I'm speaking into it right this second. I bought it 9 years ago or something, yeah. 8 years ago, something like that. And one of the reasons I like it is I'll tell you, the USB thing appeals to me. I plug it in the back of the microphone, I plug it into my computer, and I'm done. The rest of that, like, if I didn't have USB, that would confuse me. Like, I don't totally understand how an XLR, I know what an XLR plug is. I played in, you know, in enough bands and stuff to know that what a microphone plug looks like, you know. But I don't understand how that gets to my computer digitally, and I think there's probably options there, so we can talk about that in a minute too. But this Rode Podcaster has a really nice stand. I have a pop filter that I forgot to put on it, and I'm putting on it right now. There we go. That's on there now. That's good.
Well, there you go. World's better right away.
good. Yeah, and it has a boom arm and a shock mount, and it it looks professional, and it fits on my desk really nicely, and so I like it. I like it, and it was less than $250, and they've never updated it as far as I can tell. I had to buy a replacement, or because I want whatever life circumstances, I had to get another one, and I ordered another one, and I ordered the black one, and it was the identical but black. You know, they never touched this thing.
And you probably originally, there's a kit that you, maybe this is what you bought originally, that has a shock mount and the boom stand with it.
I ultimately bought them all separately. Oh, okay. But yes, I understand it. It has it. I did buy a different microphone at one point, because this is not easy to travel with. And there may be some kind of easy to travel with version. I used to have a boom stand that had this metal stand that just would stay upright because it was so heavy, you know, like a microphone stand in a band or whatever. I've since moved to the one that clamps onto the side of my table, which I like more. But even that heavy thing was hard to travel with. So I bought a different microphone, a Blue Yeti, which is similarly priced, but it has its own little stand. So that's what was compelled me to buy that one. Yeah. And that, it is frustrating, because it's, I think they're both technically condenser mics, which are designed to pick up, you know, more audio from wide. I guess you could just describe it better than I am. But Blue Yeti is particularly condenser-like.
Yeah, so the Blue Yeti is a really popular one amongst podcasters, or amateur podcasters, or whatever we all are, I guess. But and it gets a lot of knocks against it from audio nerds, because often it's not configured properly. It has some really cool settings on it for where you could use it, say, in a room with maybe a bunch of, like, if you did Shop Talk Show, or maybe you did it with Code Pattern one time.
Yeah, where, it's like, do you want the cardioid pattern? Or
yeah, you're all talking into one mic from everywhere in the room, or maybe just two people, like one side and the other side. And so there's a dial on it where you can set it to different things. And so it's really flexible that way. But often, not often, but sometimes people forget how to configure it and use it in the wrong mode. And then you've got, you know, it in like cardioid mode or whatever it's called, and you're picking up all your cats and your whatever, as well as your conversation. But it often goes on sale at Amazon. It's a great mic to pick up to try this whole, you know, podcasting thing out with, for sure. Because
yeah, USB, and has its own stand, and is fairly high quality. I find on mine that even if you get it on the right setting, that you gain as low as it can go and get your mouth right up on it is the way to make it sound like you're not in a auditorium and you can hear a pin drop kind of thing, which is too bad, because then a garbage truck drives by or whatever, and it really messes with.
And that's where, going back to the pop filter, actually sometimes, depending on the mic and everything, but I found getting a pop filter, besides the handling the what it's for, the pop filter stuff, is it actually gives you a reference point for where you should have your mouth in reference to your microphone. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't want to be eating the mic and you forget, and all of a sudden you're yapping right into the microphone, and then you've got other issues maybe depending on the microphone. But yeah, so the Rode Podcaster works great. I've heard lots of people using it over the years. There was a time period there where I heard folks like some great gear folks like Ray Ortega, podcasterstudio.com, Dan Benjamin has a podcastmethod.co, where they actually test out a lot of this gear. And there's the Rode Podcaster was having some issues of manufacturing issues or something like that. I don't know if that's still true today. Obviously, if you buy it through Amazon, I'm sure you can just get a refund or exchange if it's broken. And like you said, yours has lasted for years and years. So Going back to within that sort of 250 range, the picking up that the cheap mic that we talked about in the ATR 2100, you can get something like, say, a Focusrite preamp, which is what I've got here. They make a great line of preamps that basically hook into your computer with USB, and then depending on the model, give you 1, 2, 3, 4 XLR plugs plus quarter inch, like what you'd use for, say, a guitar other devices like that, that you would, instruments like that. And it gives you those, the ability to plug those in and route them into your computer. And so then all those, you know, cool XLR cable stuff that you have from maybe a microphone or whatever else gets converted into a digital signal by this preamp, and then sent through the USB cable into your computer, where software like GarageBand, Logic, and others we'll talk about can route that. And so then you can have, if you're doing a podcast, if you and Dave were in the room instead of, you know, across the country or whatever, you could actually just have like two microphones in the room hooked into a preamp, and then you'd have each of them on their own track. So did I sort of gloss over anything there with the...
Yeah, no... I like it, but we got to spend a little more time on equipment before we move on, because My question to you is like, it's time, and maybe I'll pull the trigger, you know, this week, or maybe it'll be a month from
The Shop Talk Show right now.
No. Yeah. I want to buy some new stuff. I want to sound at least as good as you're sounding now. I want to sound like one of those radio guys. Let's say I have $800 or $1,000 or something that I'm willing to, after all these episodes, invest into a higher quality audio setup for myself. You know, what can I do? You know, not $2,500, but say $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what I would do with $2,500 budget for podcasting either. So the mic I'm talking into, we kind of joke about, is what's called a Heil PR40, H-E-I-L PR40. Mm-hmm. And it gets kind of it was really popular for a long time. It probably still is, I guess. But Leo Laporte, famously of tech TV and stuff.
Leo sounds great on his podcast. I'd like to sound like Leo.
Yeah. So a big part of it, though, is your voice. And I have a sort of deeper bassy voice.
So that's not your microphone. That's you sound like
that. Is me too. And so, but the microphone that you use, this is where it's kind of handy. If you can go to like a guitar store or whatever and do a bit of testing with a mic, it does kind of accentuate or minimize, I guess, some of your vocal, I'll say, issues or perks, I guess, depending on how your voice sounds. And so that's why like singers and stuff will, you know, use different microphones, because it highlights the parts of their voice they like and things like that. So Heil PR40 is great because it's a dynamic mic, but it produces condenser-like sounds. And so condenser mics...
So it's not a condenser. Condenser, I think, has like a big like snare drum-like head on. I'm sure that's not exactly accurate, but it picks up a lot of sound. It's designed to pick up a room full of sound if you need it to. This is not that. It has a... It's not a condenser.
Right. Condensers generally are better tuned to higher frequencies, which gives it kind of a crisp sound. But it can be that can be a problem for podcasters when you're in home. And like, I'm not in a professional studio. I don't have foam on the wall or anything like that. I'm just in a basement room.
You almost sound like you are, though.
So. Yeah. And that's where the Heil PR40 is nice, because it does do a good job of giving a nice crisp sound with in the dynamic microphone style. And so it doesn't pick up a lot of the extra stuff that's going on in the room. So that one, that mic, let's say that on its own, I think it's around $350 or something like that. There's a bundle that Amazon has. You can put it in the show notes. But with a mic, a shock mount, a boom and cables and all that, everything you'd need basically to plug that thing into the preamp, like I was saying, would be around $450. So then you take your mic, you've got it hooked up to your desk, you got the cable, then you pick up a preamp like the Focusrite. There's a 2i4 for $200, let's say, or a few different models in there. And you sort of pick whether you think you'd ever actually have someone in your physical space with you or not. And so, because I think I might someday have friends come over and podcast, someday I'll have friends, then I did the 2i4. So there's actually four XLR inputs. I use it to have...
Wait, on what? On the microphone itself or on...
No, on the box. Thing? Yeah, it's like a little rectangular box.
This is the part that confuses me the most. What is the box?
So that box, that preamp, this is where if we had the visual podcast...
Oh, I see. Is this what you're talking about, the DBX-286?
No, a little further down. Where is it here in the show? It's Focusrite 2i4.
Oh, 2i4. They're in the same range. They're $200.
Yeah, so that thing that you're looking at... There's little XLR inputs.
This looks, once you have one of these, you're in a different category, I feel like. This is like, it does not look like computer equipment. It looks like audio nerd equipment.
Yeah, you're like doing garage band, like you're in a band or whatever kind of stuff too, or things like that. And that's where it helps.
Oh, they're sold out of the 4 mic. So when I buy this thing, it's a preamp and it's going to improve the quality of my sound. Or whatever, but perhaps most importantly, it's going to allow a microphone that absolutely doesn't have a USB thing on it to something that does, right? Like this preamp spits out USB, yeah?
Yes, yeah. So it plugs in via USB into the computer, and then USB 2 or USB 3, depending on which model. But and then that basically takes your signal that's analog as you speak into the microphone and converts it to digital into the computer.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah, so, sorry, I'm just going to cough, which I can edit out later.
Okay, if I go to the Heil PR40, the Leo Laporte mic, it's $400 or whatever, but $450 if I get a mic, a shock mount, a boom, maybe a pop filter or some kind of cover for it or something. Great setup. I need the preamp. I cannot yes. plug it into my computer without the preamp. So I right. buy this Focusrite thing. Maybe I'll buy you can buy a one micer, I guess, if you want, yeah. but you'd probably be smart to buy a 2 or a 4 or an 8 or whatever in case you want.
The multiple ones, besides having friends over to maybe podcast, where it helps for me, for example, is some, I don't have it hooked up right now, but I can have my iPhone plugged in and maybe use it as a soundboard, let's say, playing back sounds to you.
But how does it come across USB? Are they separate tracks or does it automatically smush them all together?
No, so in the software on the side, so this is where you wouldn't then start using, if you were doing multiple people, let's say in the room with you, you wouldn't be using QuickTime to record that. You would use GarageBand or Logic or something more.
If I go this route and I'm tempted to pull the trigger on this thing, my QuickTime player days are over.
Well, for one track only. If it's just you, like you and Dave doing your thing and you're not doing anything different, you could still use QuickTime just to record and keep it simple.
If I need multiple tracks off just my computer, then
right. Yeah. So you're going to, if you have the soundboard or you have your banjo plugged in or whatever. And I should also say that PR40 isn't the only one. There's a Shure SM7B that also a lot of folks.
Yeah. That one looks great.
Looks really professional radio looking as well. So both of those are sort of higher end mics. And
you're going to need a shock mount and all this stuff to go with it. And it's in a similar territory. On the back of that mic is only an XLR connector.
Right. And the other box that you clicked on, the DBX 286. So that's, I guess I'm kind of mixing up terms here, but that's only a preamp that doesn't connect to the computer. It just is, you can kind of think of it in just quick terms here as a sound sweetener. So it would just, you would plug your mic into that thing and then that thing would plug into the Focusrite preamp.
Oh my God.
Mixer. Yeah. But it is kind of like in the sub $1,000 range anyways. That's kind of like the sweetest of
You'd
sweetest.
You'd really even, sound good if you...
Yeah, I don't even have one of those, so...
You got the Shure SMB7 and the DBX 286 and the Focusrite 2i4. All that stuff would be under $1,000 and you'd sound awesome.
Plus, the cool part is you get lots of dials and widgets and buttons and numbers and dashes.
Scary.
I know.
What if you screw it up? Isn't it screw-upable?
It is a bit in terms of the only thing you can screw up. Then like, this is where I forget who it is. I won't name names on Code Pen Radio, but if you're too loud, then there's only so much you can do. Or if you're too quiet, right. That's where, that's the biggest issue.
That's huge. We should let's not go there just yet. Cause we should go through the checklist of like, let's say not only you're on a podcast, but you're the guest on a podcast. Cause that's the number one thing we screw up is the gain is too high and that's just unsalvageably garbage at the
Right. And that's where you might not even hear it on your end. Like, I'm assuming, you know, when they're tired, I forget who it is, but somebody was, you know, joking about how they thought someone was yelling at them or whatever, but it doesn't actually sound that bad in the Skype conversation, but then you listen back to it and they're, you know, gain. It's kind of like, this is what happens when you turn a guitar amp up too loud and where you want gain and it crunches, right? But obviously when you're talking, you don't want that crunchy sound in your voice, unless you're doing a death metal podcast maybe.
Long as your gain is okay, you can't screw it up too bad, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And sort of quieter is better than too loud because it's easier to sort of boost it a bit in post than it is to...
This DBX thing though, the little other thing is a little box that you could picture sitting on your desk. This DBX thing looks like it mounts into some kind of rack that you won't have.
Right. And you can just sit it on your desk. I see lots of folks have it just on their desk underneath their Focusrite. And there is what's nice about that thing is there's settings online you can find. It's kind of just like anything else. You can Google DBX 286 preamp settings for podcaster.
It'll be a little picture of where to put the dial.
Exactly. So, and there's a gate, a noise gate on it as well. So what's nice, a noise gate basically is you can think of it as just a gate that allows noise through or doesn't. And so you set it to, if unless the sound is this loud, whatever level you set it to, it won't allow it through.
That sounds both awesome and dangerous. Because if I do one of these things, they're like, oh, where am I at right now?
Well, if anybody's ever listened to Shop Talk show and I haven't edited too carefully, and there's a moment maybe where Chris backs off the mic and isn't quite as loud.
Just like that, you did.
Yeah, and then the noise gate kicks in. Is like, okay, Chris has stopped talking, because I use that on the editing side as well, software side, and that then automatically sort of cuts out any little noises, maybe you're shuffling papers or whatever. But if you talk too quietly, then all of a sudden your audio cuts out
completely. And that's you doing it though, but this does it on the as the audio is coming in.
Yeah, yeah. So it saves if you're doing the editing and you want to save some of that time and processing on the computer, it's all kind of helps in the saves you time on the post-production side. So,
wow. I'm tempted to do it because it wouldn't be that hard. It's a lot of just connecting some cables together and looking at some pre-configured things and then testing yourself a little bit and making sure that it sounds good. How am I going to know it sounds good? Like, I guess I put my good headphones on and check. I guess that's obvious because I used to have like fancy speakers on my desk and it just started to be like too many wires and stuff. I'm like, I don't care if I'm listening to some YouTube video. I don't need like epic quality sound, you know?
Yeah. And you would just compare, I mean, anybody would be able to hear, I guess, before and after versions on the podcast, even because obviously it's getting compressed.
I mean, obviously that's why I'm going to spend $1,000. Cause I sure as heck hope you're going to be able to tell the difference. Yeah.
That's the money back guarantee from me, I guess.
Yeah.
Cause you do have, like, that's the thing, I guess you do have a natural sounding or not good sounding voice to begin with. And so it does help that starting from, you know, good audio, if you want to call your voice just audio, you know, you've got a good starting point. And so even with a crappier mic, you still sound pretty good. And so this might be like you're at 70% and this bumps you up to 90% or whatever that might be. But, so it's not going to necessarily double your audio quality if that's even a thing we could measure, but it'll definitely, make you sound better. So,
okay. So maybe I'll do this. It's very tempting me. It's just a plus. It's just appeal. I think there's, you get old enough to a certain age and this is like the last fun there is in the world. So I'm going to take
next
it.
To fixing your lawnmower. This is the,
yeah, this is about it. I love this stuff. So, okay. Yep. So I do that, but it doesn't help. I mean, there's still, what about the checklist? Let's do that part. Like what is it behind the scenes at Shop Talk Show? We tell everybody, you better pause your Google Drive, your Dropbox, quit Slack, please turn off any notifications. If somebody else is streaming Netflix in your house, please ask them to stop temporarily, watch a DVD or something. There's all those things because that's going to affect audio quality in a sense, in that, like, if I can't hear you because you've dropped out of Skype or whatever. We tend to use Zoom, by the way, at Shop Talk Show. We have switched to that because it just tends to work a little better than Skype, I think, or Google Hangouts even and stuff like that. So that type of stuff matters. I mean, I guess that's pretty obvious, but that doesn't directly affect audio quality. What does affect audio quality is a cop driving by with his siren on, or you're in a super echoey room. I mean, the Heil PR40 can't stop you being in a crappy room, right?
Right. But it does help a lot compared to, you know, say the $70 microphone. There's a test, actually, Ray Ortega, the one guy I mentioned in the links, he has a test of that $70 mic and the Heil PR40 and how they compare. And in a good room, they both sound very comparable, actually. But then if I was using that $70 mic in this office that I'm in with flat everywhere and, you know, sound bouncing everywhere, I guarantee you I would sound a lot worse than I do. And so
that's interesting. It saves a bad room in a way. That's appealing to me because neither of us are in a sound studio, nor are we ever going to be, probably.
And you do a bit, like, and folks who are paying attention or listening carefully to previous episodes, you know, when you travel and you can tell that there's either, you know, different sounds in the background or it's more echoey or not, and those kinds of things. And there's obviously, you can't do much about, I know you've had like some guy with a leaf blower outside your window or whatever.
Yeah, and that's just, you just can't kill you no matter what.
Yeah, short of yelling at
me, I guess. This particular episode, I happen to be up in my attic back in Milwaukee. So my Florida days are come to an end. And that room, the day I moved there and I had to record, was the worst. Because part of it wasn't just necessarily the room, but the fact there was nothing in the room. It was just right. Empty tile floor. So at least this room it's got carpeting. It's got posters and stuff on the wall. And it's got books and shelves. And it's like, it's actually a weird, like even the walls are like at weird angles and stuff that probably helps.
Yep.
And it's three floors up from the ground. So you don't hear cars driving by as much. Sure, hopefully this episode sounds a little better than the last few months of episodes. But it's going to look better. I'm not going to be able to bring my Shure 7MB or whatever though, you know, or whatever. If I buy the Heil or whatever, that probably isn't coming with me.
Right. So it's a lot of travel gear to bring along just for, yeah.
So no, and we try to avoid that. So maybe we'll even get to a point in the show where we stop doing road shows. You know, like if we're out of town, we're out of town. Too bad, you know?
Right.
We're not there yet. And okay, let's switch gears. One of the reasons we're not there yet is because we sell advertising on Chop Talk Show. Even this episode is sponsored by Gather Content, which you saw, which is an awesome little web app that you've either heard or are about to hear.
Maybe we should stop right now for a podcast sponsor read.
Yeah. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by a brand new fabulous sponsor, Gather Content. It's a really nice web app that I've been using for quite a while now. It's for gathering content, for things like website redesigns, new website builds, new sections of content on an existing website. The URL, gathercontent.com/shoptalk. Make sure to use the coupon code SHOPTALK, which is 15% off any plan for the first 3 months. So one of the most common problems in website projects, it's not the obvious stuff like design approvals, development challenges. It's often content that causes the delays with clients and stakeholders sending in content late, sending it in the wrong format, sending stuff that's not right for the design or the CMS, getting lost in email chains and shared folders and final dot doc, whatever, that kind of stuff. Gather Content is built to put a process around your content production for websites so content doesn't delay launches. Customizable templates for the content that you're collecting, like I need this, familiar web tools, it's great. Customizable workflow, like what the state of things are in. Customizable in the sense of like you're inviting collaborators and you're giving people roles and tasks and permissions that, you know, for your flow, there's notifications to keep everybody on track. At the end, there's, you know, tools to migrate the content out to where you need it. Fantastic web app, gathercontent.com/shoptalk, coupon code shoptalk, 15% off. Any plan, first 3 months. Which means that if we promise them that episode is going to go out on, you know, June 18th or whatever it is. That's not an accurate date. I just said a date. It better do that, you know, or with their money back or whatever. Like you don't mess around with that stuff. We screw it up sometimes and always try to make it right or give them a freebie or whatever else. But yeah, you can't just not do a show because you're not at home or whatever. Doing a show from the road is a necessity sometimes. There were lots of questions about that, about the about the making money from podcasting kind of thing. So where should we go with that?
Well, I think that's often a common, like the first step is I want a podcast and the second one is how can I make money from this? And it obviously is a lot harder than it used to be. There's way more podcasts and way more, the advertisers and sponsors are way more savvy to what's going on and know that they're not, you know, there is a lot of podcasts to be on. And so, but it's a fair question to ask. And I think it's something that hopefully you're not getting into it specifically to make money because it is going to be a tough road ahead, but, it is certainly possible. And so there's a question from, at Stephen Beffeld. I'm not sure how you say his name. That's a common thing I screw up on my podcast is mispronouncing Twitter handles, but what kind of money do you make from sponsors? Is it gas money or, you know, obviously more or whatever. And I think in my experience, we've had, it's feast and famine almost where some shows gain popularity enough that it warrants having a sponsor for a while. We got really lucky in the early days with Good Stuff that Campaign Monitor decided to come on and just give us a boost each month of around $1,000 or something that was just kind of like, we're going to help.
That's great.
Help a creative endeavor and see where it goes. And we didn't have to even report sponsor number that we asked if they wanted it. They don't do that anymore. So don't go begging for money because we tried, but, you know, it was just kind of good timing and on all that kind of stuff. And so it can happen, or you can just do it for the love of it. And maybe you get a bit of a help from web host.
If you're going to list the ways, I can't, there's not very many ways. There's get a sponsor for the show itself. That's the most common way. There, maybe you could do some kind of affiliate program or something, but in order for that to work, they're going to have to click a link or visit a very specific URL. And that's tricky, I would say. So I don't think anybody's killing it with affiliate programs on podcasts, that's for sure. Or see, is there some kind of way you can make money from the website itself? And as we already talked about on the show, not very many people come to the website itself. We have very, very little traffic on Chop Talk Show. I mean, it's just not much at all. So nobody getting anything there. But I would consider that a value add for the sponsor, is that you sponsor the show and now that sponsorship is going to go into the show notes and onto the permanent page that's for that show kind of forever. And that's valuable, I think. But, you know, it's not generating a heck of a lot of clicks because it just won't, you know.
Even that's where... Like with the sponsors and you guys, I don't deal with the business side of Shop Talk Show, so I can't speak to any of that. But the whatever niche your podcast is in, chances are there is a business that could benefit from marketing to that niche. So don't go after the, you know, let's say whatever your podcast is about, maybe it's about USB keychains or something, some really obscure thing or whatever. Don't go after Squarespace or the Casper and the big, you know, people that sponsor every other podcast, because they're not interested. They want minimum of like 10,000 listens per episode and on up kind of thing. Go after maybe a local business that would benefit from being on there, or a smaller business like your smaller podcast, and you might have some success that way. Because ultimately it comes down to the amount of people listening, either for the affiliate side or the sponsorship side, to work. And you just have to have an audience. And so, which is one of the, I know one of the questions was from at PBear1979, who asked, what's the best way to build an audience? And that's the $1 million question in podcasting. And related to that is, should your podcast have social profiles and, you know, custom domain and how to get paid and all that kind of stuff, which Ken Howard asked. And all those things sort of depend on your topic, your niche.
I wonder how big a topic is. Like, you know, I know like generic tech podcasts are certainly a lot more popular than our front-end design one here. And like, so let's say you spun up a new, like, let's talk about Apple podcast. You're a small fish in a big pond, but because the pond is so big, I wonder if you get a bigger audience anyway, you know?
Yeah, it's a bit of that. Yeah. But there is a lot of options for that kind of podcasts already. And so that's where I feel like, and it's on the marketing side, I know it's always like pick a niche and then pick even more of a niche than that and all that kind of stuff, and go really specific. Like you just talk about lightning cables or something. I'm just looking around my desk, obviously, but anyway, you only talk about that. You don't talk about MacBooks or anything, but you're the lightning cable podcast or whatever. And I think that's the only way these days on the internet to sort of find that. 'Cause you'll find other people who are as fascinated with just lightning cables who don't care about MacBooks or whatever. And that's kind of a great way to build an audience, because even something like a TV show that you might want to, you're really into, there might be a ton of podcasts already on that TV show, but you just add your voice to it and people find your podcast and then basically kind of, you know, discover a community that they want to be a part of. So,
that, I mean, I guess we can stay there for a minute, because that, you know, there's... finding an audience, sure, a niche thing is a good idea. I think that's, especially if you like it, that's a great place to stay, I would think.
Yeah.
I think Mike Tyler asked about how do you stay motivated in the kind of thing, and a lot of people asked about like what kind of money are you talking about? Because there's, I've already rabbit holed us and went all over the place, but I'd say that I could just tell you that Shop Talk is more like gas money. That was one of the questions, is it real money or is it gas money? It's a lot closer to gas money. And I would say that's probably true for a lot of podcasts. I think you have to be pretty big to make it money. That's just my guess. Maybe we're just terrible at selling ads or whatever, but even if you have, it's just very difficult to do. And then you'll read an article that tells you about how Serial is just swimming in cash or whatever. whatever, and the podcast is the new revolution, and everybody's going to be going there, and it's the future of media, and there's money now, but there's the money's about to come, and it's like I think that's just so only true for the biggest of the big.
Yeah, there is definitely a bit of the filter down effect, but it is like the numbers, at least when I looked into them 6 months ago or whatever, it is like the metrics are like 10,000 to 15,000 downloads per episode before they're talking about any sort of at that, you know, upper level of sponsors for, you know, hundreds of dollars. So you can do the math that if you're just going to get $400 per episode and you're doing an episode a week, that's not going to, it's money that pays you for your sponsor or for your equipment and your hobby and whatever, but it's not going to necessarily, it might just pay a mortgage or whatever if you can get to that level, right? And so there's often a question about like, should we be on a podcast network? Is that going to give us success or whatever?
Yeah, that's a big deal too. I don't know what to say about that because we aren't one and you are one, so I guess it would be kind of an interesting thing. But I would think the biggest advantage being like, I want to do a show, but I don't want to deal with advertisers at all. I don't want to deal with the website at all. I don't want to deal with technical support problems at all. I just want to do a show. I could see there'd be extreme advantages to a network.
Yeah, and that's where it and just like camaraderie with other people doing a thing together, I guess, too. Community is a big part of it. And there's certain aspects of it where iTunes will feature a provider, a network provider or whatever. Like, but again, that was great 4 years ago when Good Stuff got featured on iTunes homepage as a network provider. Maybe not 4 years ago, but whereas now it's like, well, CBS and NPR and, you know, those are the people they're featuring because they have the big network.
Pretty providers. Tough to make a top 10 anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
On that.
So it's not to discourage people from trying, but it definitely is, you know, it's much more difficult to break through.
So I have our, you know, speaking of, so, you know, I don't know, just a quick behind the scenes of how we do it. And there's lots of different ways to do it. In fact, Simplecast.com is interesting in that it's like a service for hosting your podcast. So not only does it host the MP3, because of course that's a part of this equation as well, as the final product from editing is an MP3, or I don't even know about formats these days. Maybe it's M4A or AUG, or I don't know what it is, but MP3 seems fairly safe.
Yeah.
You got to host it somewhere, and they're, you know, depending on size, they're, it's bigger than a website for sure. You're in the tens of megabytes at least, I'd say. And then what do you do? Throw it on S3? Whatever. You need somewhere to host this thing that isn't going to kill you. Simplecast.com is where we chuck ours. They do the hosting component to it, but it also will make a little website for you of your podcast, which is kind of cool. I could see that being compelling, and it has statistics for you. So it's funny, at Shop Talk Show, we use Simplecast, and we put our, but we it's nice to see the statistics, but we don't use the website component at all. ShopTalkShow.com is a WordPress site, and we have a plugin installed on it. I think it's called PodPress or something. It's ancient, and it's not very good, which is the generous way of saying it. But it's also not that bad in that basically what we want out of it is to drop a URL to an MP3 in there somewhere and have it generate like iTunes valid or basically podcast valid RSS feed. And it does that. So that's all there is to it. So that's one of the ways you can do it. Spin up a WordPress site, install some kind of podcasting plugin. The CodePen Radio one uses one called like Blueberry or something that's missing a bunch of vowels.
Yeah, it's a really popular one, yeah.
Yeah, and I've heard there's a better one these days. I don't know what it is. Feel free to leave it in the comments. It's certainly something that somebody could do a good job with on WordPress, but it's not required. I wouldn't be surprised if Squarespace lets you host a podcast or something. There's probably a million ways to do it. I don't know all the ways. Sorry, I didn't do the research, but as long as whatever you're using can spit out a podcast-worthy RSS feed, that's a way to do it.
Yeah, sites like Simplecast can build the site for you, do everything for you. We use a good stuff. We use FeedPress, which is similar to Simplecast. And just for, I'll put it in the show notes just because I know people are often curious about stats and what they look like and whatever. And obviously, you know, the golden rule.
I can do it right now for Shop Talk Show. Yeah. It looks like the very last episode was the one, the Netflix React stuff. We got going on 12,000 downloads for that one. I actually don't know how. It's the best statistics you can get. I mean, I've proven at one point that an additional download of a podcast from iTunes, like I set it up like a whole experiment to see, like, is it going to count a second download from iTunes? And it didn't. And it was, so it was like, there's some kind of caching that goes on. Like Simplecast doesn't have there's no way they can get 100% perfect numbers on this stuff because of caching and stuff that happens at different levels. But it has some kind of statistics, and if it's as good as you can get, it's as good as you can get, whatever. We're at the maybe 20,000 across the entire month for a particular episode. The CSS grid we did one was now 3 weeks ago, so it's like at 17.7 or something, the episode, which is great. And we're still talking basically gas money, and that might be our bad sales or whatever. But I'm telling you, like, and you said, you know, feast or famine kind of thing. It's a lot more like famine over here. And it's not that we're going to stop doing it, because there's other reasons to podcast. Like, I like it. It's fun. It gives me a chance to hang out with my friend. It feeds other ideas for other projects I work on. I mean, there's lots of reasons to kind of enjoy.
I'll just add too that it's a great way to meet and an excuse to talk to people that you wouldn't otherwise have a good way to talk to. I know,
absolutely.
We friends of mine put a there's a show called Legion. They did a podcast and they have like 50 to 100 people downloading it, not like minuscule numbers, but they got to interview the composer from the show and one of the directors of an episode and stuff like that. So I'll just say a word on stats too, and just why you cannot really. You ultimately have to sort of take a big picture view of it. Is I have on my own little personal podcast I do called Dailyish, there's like, you know, 100 and some people downloading. And then for whatever reason, one episode got 7,000 hits on it out of nowhere. And I really don't know why. So if I ran with that number and was like, now I get 7,000 downloads, obviously I'd be lying to sponsors and things like that. And that's where you just sort of have to take a bit of it with a grain, everything with a grain of salt and sort of understand it's kind of like over the long term, what are you sort of averaging per month and on an episode and things like that. So.
Yeah. So stats are, yeah, definitely kind of grain of salt kind of thing. And I don't know. I don't know. You know, I don't know how you make money with the advertisers. We definitely haven't cracked it at ShopTalk. Although years ago, we were selling two spots per show. We still sell two spots per show, but if you've been listening for a while, it's been a long time since we've actually sold both. And we sell them for $500 a pop. You know, it's not like we're paying our mortgage for these things, especially when the company that sells them for us takes a cut and we split it in half between me and Dave and we pay taxes on it and stuff. It's gas money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Is the price too high? Is it actually too low and it seems invaluable? Is the money dropped out of this kind of market? Is it too niche? I mean, those things are just impossible to know, you know? I certainly don't spend all day doing sales. And I do promise you that if I did do that, if I could dedicate an entire day a week hustling for sales, we could sell more. I just don't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly you're at the download numbers metric-wise anyways, where you should be able to do a little bit better, but whether it's the trade-off of your time obviously doing other things versus sales, and maybe somebody out there has got a little niche business doing sales that is, you know, more aggressive than what you're using right now.
It's popping up. I've heard it. I hear from people occasionally that are like, we're doing the hustling for you, and to the point even where they'll like buy inventory for you and then sell it at an upcharge, which I'm like, what is happening? That is weird. A plane is going overhead. So let's see if Chris Enns can edit this out. Does anybody notice? Is my microphone sensitive enough?
I heard it, so it'll be there. Oh,
it'll be there. Okay. So that's the audience. There's classic stuff to say. Just like you probably got to build an audience elsewhere and bring it to your podcast almost, you know?
I know often people are asking, like, should I set up a Twitter account or whatever? And like some of that social media marketing.
Oh, didn't we get a very specific one about that? Ken Howard says, should I have social profiles for my podcast, custom domain, yada, yada.
I think it's worth it. Like you guys, even with ShopTalk, I know Dave kind of jokes about tens of tweets a month or whatever for ShopTalk show. It just gives a way for people to talk about the thing and share it.
Exactly. Yeah. You should have an at handle for Twitter for sure. Twitter, it seems more important almost than Facebook, even though there's like an order of magnitude more people on Facebook. It just seems like podcasting is still pretty Twittery these days, at least to me. I don't know.
Yeah. It probably depends on your niche there or your topic or whatever too that goes on over there. But yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sure if it's a, I don't know, super mainstream thing that you're probably better off on Facebook, but I don't know. Maybe we should get there. Okay, so yeah, having a website probably makes sense. Having some kind of brand and makes sense, you know. The making money thing is tough. Sponsorship being clearly the number one way to do it. You could also like sell t-shirts or whatever, but you know, you can't even buy one at Chop Talk Show right now. It's not a lot of money in t-shirts either, I'll tell you. Okay, so I know we're at over an hour already, so there's probably a little bit more to do, but maybe we can end with, let's say you have great equipment, you've recorded all the stuff, you have sponsors, everything's happy. What is that editing process like? Do you want to talk a little bit about the software involved there and how that goes down?
Sure. Yeah. So like I said earlier, some of the free apps that you could use, like Audacity, is a recording and editing app. For my brain, the way my brain works, it's kind of like looking at Sludge or something. The UI is just not me, but lots of folks love it. I decided to upgrade to Logic Pro on my Mac, but also Adobe Audition is another really popular one if you have the Creative Suite already for, you know, whatever else, Photoshop, etc. And it has actually a lot of really good sound repair filters and effects that are included in Audition that, you know, if you take the time to figure them out, work really, really well. And so that can help you fix some of the stuff like noise in the background or if somebody is, say, peeking, talking, they're really loud recording, you can throw that into Audition and do some fixing of that. Things like, I'll just mention other things like audio intros and effects. You can visit sites like Audio Jungle, musicformakers.com, or soundstripe.com, or a few, there's a million of those too, where you can find, you know, loops and audio and intro music and outro music and sponsor music and all that kind of stuff. And that's, we get for Shop Talk Show, I use some stuff from Music for Makers, which is a subscription service. If you're looking on the audio editing side of sort of improving and fixing audio, this is kind of feels like giving away the secret sauce in a way, but there's a package. It's around $300, I think, but from Isotope, Izotope, that's their RX suite that is basically like, it's almost to this granular level where it's like, is there a lawnmower in the background? Then use this filter. If there's a, you know, that kind of stuff where you can remove echo, remove noise.
Yeah.
That
seems like the real, you know, that you're not just lining things up and adjusting a few levels at that point. Now you're using like filters and really.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like sort of next level editing stuff. But in terms of actually how to edit and why and where, I would just suggest my general rule, and people would know, I guess, from listening to Shop Talk over the last number of episodes, is trying not to take the humanness out of the conversation, where, you know, there's going to be natural breaths and natural pauses and things like that. You don't want it to be so scripted or sound so edited that there's hardly any of that. But at the same time, making sure you go through and you know, if when Chris is talking, taking out Dave, you know, clicking his mouse as much as possible, and sometimes it just leaks through just or whatever. Or if a guest is, you know, coughing, and that's where having them on multiple tracks allows you to do that, where you can say cut out a noise on one track and make sure that the person who's actually got the primary talking got the was it in Lord of the Flies, the conch talking, and you're able to hear that. And so there is things like, in Logic, for example, there's a filter called Strip Silence where it'll just go through automatically and whatever, there's parameters you can set, but you know, if there's this amount of 2 seconds of silence, then just delete that right out of the audio, out of the recording. And so that can help you sort of speed up that process. But at the same time, you want to make sure that, again, the conversation sounds natural, sounds good. Having intro music and having outro music can help sort of just in terms of marketing your podcast, and just gives you a sort of a signature sound. Obviously Shop Talk Show's intro that Dave does every week, is, you know, it's a signature sound for you guys, and music that kind of clues you in what you're listening to. But don't fall in love with your music. People aren't there to listen to the intro for 2 minutes at a time or whatever.
Oh, I know. I feel like, I don't know. We did okay. And on this one, but it's been shorter, and every one we've done has been slightly shorter than the last one. I feel like even the next time we do it, we're going to get down to about 3 seconds. I feel like
just like three notes on a banjo.
Yeah, maybe. Like, that's a little too extreme, but you know, the more you listen to a show, the more you're like, okay, you could have cut that down a little bit.
And in terms of I know at Clueless asked about where to learn to interview better, you know, if you're doing that kind of thing or controlling the conversation.
What a great question. Yeah. Please learn to interview better. It's an epidemic in podcasts where it's like, how did you get started in this industry or whatever? And you're like, oh my God, you know, like I understand that you want to have like a body of work in which you've asked that same question to a lot of people, and it is interesting to see where people come from or whatever, but there's got to be a way that you can do a little research first and like rephrase it in a more interesting way, or prove to the person you're talking to that you know a little bit about them or whatever. Like, please, please do that. And then send me the link that tells you how to be a better interviewer, because I want to be one too, you know?
Well, that's right. It helps to pay attention. For years, I used to do pretend radio shows or whatever on just in like my tape deck or whatever as a kid, and just paying attention to the, not the guest of an interview. Like often you would, you know, if you're watching a good interview, you're not really even aware of the interviewer because you're, the guest is the highlight or whatever. Right. And, but trying to flip your brain to remember how the interviewer is handling it, how they're prepping for questions, what they're doing while the guest is answering a question. Like, cause you need to be listening obviously to what they're saying, but you also have to be thinking about, okay, what am I going to say next? And not erring too much on that side. Cause if you, they answer the question and the audience would be sitting there thinking, okay, ask them about why they mentioned the soccer ball or whatever, but you just like completely skip over that and go on to some other topic because that's the next thing in your list. That's where it, and it's a tough skill that you just need to practice. And so maybe you do a podcast series that is just an excuse for you to interview people so that you can get better at interviewing people, right? And sort of handling those kind of conversations, or doing on the YouTube podcast I do, there's often 3-4 guests on. And so managing a conversation like that, and you do this as well on Shop Talk, where you're kind of having to say, okay, now we're going to move on because we could just spend hours on this conversation. And figuring out when and how and where to do that is something that probably some people have it naturally, but I think for most of us just takes time and experience. And sometimes you just screw up because your brain farts and you have nothing to say at that moment. And that's where editing helps. And that's where, for me, with this interview with you or this conversation with you, I know I'm going to be editing it afterwards. So if I really screw up, I could just, you know, chop out this whole segment and nobody would ever know that I said it. So if that was okay, Chris, otherwise I can edit it out.
No, it's good. I like it.
Okay. Well, God, that was a perfect deep dive into a subject that's fascinating. So I, you know, hopefully all the aspiring podcasters out here know a little bit more about equipment and software and kind of what you're in for here.
I was just going to ask you, Chris, in terms of the Shop Talk show, and for people at Marla Bakes asked this, do you discuss talking etiquette, timekeeping, and outlines before you start recording? So, you know, getting a sloppy podcast versus well put together. So for you and Dave, as you're prepping for a Shop Talk show episode, how much of it is arranged and scripted versus how much is just off the cuff and Dave just reacting to you and vice versa?
We're very off the cuff, but we do have a Trello column for every show that is a loose guide to what we're going to say, which is full of questions and little ideas and links to tweets and URLs that are relevant and that kind of thing. And that tends to be like enough guidance for the thing. And because we're a question and answer show, as you know, like a lot, we do those rapid fires a lot, and we sprinkle those into guest shows as well, the user questions that, as we have in this show, we have a place to submit questions on the website, which is a WooFoo form, which goes to Zapier, which pushes it to Trello. So that was a nice innovation for us, and that your questions just kind of appear in a Trello column and we can drag them into the show that's appropriate. That's been pretty great. So that's kind of our behind the scenes tech of how a show goes now, but very much not scripted or written.
Yeah. That's where you listen to a show on NPR or whatever, and you think, oh, I could do that. And then when you think about the amount of time that it would take just to script out a 30-minute, you know, episode of something.
Oh, it's insane. That's another good point that I feel like is worth making on the air here, is that there's almost like two kinds of podcasts in the world. There's those in which, you know, like, imagine, I mean, I know it's like talking about Walmart when you talk about business or whatever, but imagine an episode of This American Life. They have to talk to 50 people. They report on it for months. There's an editor involved doing all kinds of, I don't even know what it's like. It's incredibly fancy what they do to produce a single episode of that. I mean, it's clear that's why it's so good. I mean, I love that show. It's just amazing. I absolutely love it. This show is a lot closer to hit the record button, hit the stop button, and ship it. You know, we send it to you for editing and stuff. But those are the two kinds of podcast, I feel like, you know, planned, edited, multiple interview, fancy shows, and the hit record, hit stop kind of show. And there's value in both of them. We tried to dabble in it. In fact, not too long ago, maybe half a year ago, I was like, let's try to do one like that. Can we do one episode that's like an amazingly, like, I want to talk to 30 people and get little clips and storyboard it out and all that stuff. And we just gave up. It was too hard.
I would encourage, if you think, like, try one of those shows and just think about the logistics. And there's certain folks, obviously, whose brains are wired that way. And that's why they go into radio or news or, you know, reporting and stuff like that. But just the logistics of trying to tell a story in audio, wit like that is it's hard and takes talent and takes a lot of work and a lot of practice. And so I would love to see more podcasts doing it, but I know it's just not logistically possible with the amount of time it would take for each episode.
Yeah. I would think you'd know if you're getting into that, be like, nope, we're doing this. This is that kind of show and I'm going to do it because this is what I like. This is where my heart is. This is the quality I intend to produce on this show. Then you would do a couple of them and probably swallow the cost for it. And then you'd send it to advertise and be like, look, this isn't some, ho-dum podcast or whatever. Like this is we're trying to be an amazing podcast here and you want your brand to be associated with this kind of quality. Then you'd hustle, you'd do the sales and you'd get a sponsor that's paying you $10,000 an episode to be on it. You know,
that's where I think in terms of the marketing angle, and I know we need to probably wrap up, but like the local focus is something that's probably underserved by podcasting. And, you know, obviously local has to be big enough. If your city or town is only 10,000 people, then it might not warrant it. But, a bigger city that has a podcast devoted to a neighborhood or a particular topic within the city can then attract local businesses as sponsors. And you're not having to, you can just actually go literally knock on doors and things like that. So, and then also mention just in terms of sort of inspiration, and this is a bit of an outlier, but a podcast like Lore is a guy named Aaron Mankey started it. And he was a writer who wrote sort of scary stories, and then he started recording those scary stories into the podcast. And it took off like insane. I had him on my show around episode 8, and he was just before he kind of blew up. And then now it's being made into a TV series. And like there is those things that can happen. The lightning strikes at the right time, right place, and wouldn't have happened without podcasting as a medium. So it's a really exciting thing to be in and play in and try. But don't worry about if your first, kind of like a band recording an album, like don't worry if your first single doesn't take off. You can try another one, try another podcast and see what happens. So there you go. Yep.
Absolutely. We'll do the wrap up thing. I forget what Dave says, but it's like, follow us on Twitter, rate us on iTunes, yada, yada. How do people follow you? How do they give you money? I think that's what he does.
Do you listen to your own podcast? No, I'm just kidding. This is the part where you fall asleep or you're
answering your email. Start checking my email. Never do that, people.
Well, I could say what was I going to say?
Hi, Chris, on Twitter, goodstuff.fm. I'll do it for you.
Lemonproductions.ca is my business that I run the podcasting stuff out of. And if you need a little WordPress help as well, but in the vein of this thing, this episode, podcasting, editing and consulting and support, I'd be happy to hop on Skype for a nominal fee and chat about podcasting and give you some ideas and brainstorm and help you figure out what you might need or do or not do with equipment and all that kind of stuff. So, and then, tweet at me, iChris, on Twitter.
All righty. See you next time, folks. Shop Talk Show.